So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this
And welcome to This Week in Wrestling Indies International. I'm Pete. I'm with my friend Tim. Tim, how's it going, man?
It's going good. It feels like it's been a while, but we just did a show last week, so I don't know. I guess it's just that time of year where even a week feels like a month. Gets so much.
Yeah,
going
no,
on.
I know. I know exactly what you mean and stuff. Probably because it's been a pretty good lull in what's going on in wrestling right now. You know, there's everyone's getting ready to watch the New Japan show in a week or so. So it's just kind of a lull. But man, you and Quinnen busted out your annual top 50 wrestlers, right?
Yeah, that just came out. So, if I'm a little bit less talkative this week, and anyone needs to get some extra from me, they can go over and pop over there and listen to the top 50 because that's 9 hours of content from me this week.
It's always a must listen. I'm not a podcast guy, honestly, listening wise, but I do go out of my way to listen to that one because I always, even if I don't agree with you guys, you guys always have good logic behind it, and you have good examples of, if I miss this thing, I can maybe go check it out and see what your thought process is. If I'm really adamant about a point being, I think you guys are completely batshit crazy or whatever. But I do agree with a lot of what you guys say, and so I really, I think it's always an interesting take and stuff, and it's really eye opening too on some guys and girls.
Yeah, and this would be the year for some definite disagreements. I think it was really interesting. Me and Quentin, I don't know if I said this on the podcast already, but me and Quentin both agreed that this was the funnest episode that we've done. We both really had a great time. We both came to it with really different lists, comparatively a lot to last year. Last year, our lists were very similar. So this year, not as similar. So there's definitely a lot in there. I definitely took a different approach. I kind of had been really skewing my ballot towards really similar to the We Don't Know Wrestling 100. This year, I took overall star power a lot more into account, a lot more into kind of talking about people's just like what they're doing, not necessarily just the match quality, but also their performances, their kind of upping themselves overall, stuff like that, was being, you know, overall great character work and stuff being important, just because it felt like such a lack of that this year, to where the people who stand out, I mean, you know, I'm looking at it, I'm hearing people talk about 2019, such an interesting year, everything going on with All Elite and WWE and NXTs all over the planet. And to me, I'm like, as interesting as the business side of things, the in-ring to me is getting so formulaic. Everything is
stale,
the same.
Right?
And a lot of just the same stuff over and over again, really good matches. I mean, one thing I talked about on there that is emblematic of the whole thing, I think, is Aussie Open, who I think won the formerly known as Always Barry Tanner Award for the Tag Team of the Year. I think they ended up, they were one of my high ranked tag teams on the list, or I mean they were split up, but they would have been a high ranked tag team for me if I'm doing Tag Teams of the Year, all that. But I can't say what their standout match was. They have a dearth of a bunch of really good fun stuff that at the end of the day all runs together and feels like the same stuff, and that's realistically what all of wrestling is like. And I think 2019 we're just going to get more of that. Really good matches on paper with very little commitment and storyline and anything else really bringing up the rear end.
And that might not necessarily be the wrestler's fault. A lot of that falls under the guys behind the scenes doing creative. I mean, I think that's why we've been drawn to action wrestling and the Scenic City Invitationals and stuff, because there's definitely a strong creative process behind that, those guys. And it enhances the talent because there's a story that it might hook you in and stuff like that.
Yeah, even MLW, a company that I think both of us don't love, you know, reviewing, at least they have storylines, you know?
Yeah.
We may not like them or think that they're... But when they are clicking, I think we both agree that that makes Tom Lawler, Low-Key, those guys, because they have storylines plus good matches, it makes that stuff that much better.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and the other thing, you know, with MLW, which, you know, I'm really... One thing, I mean, we do kind of bash some of the creative here and there, But at least now it seems like they're getting an identity. Like, at first I didn't think they had quite an identity. But now it looks like, you know, okay, look, Tom Lawler's going to be our ace. We're going to support it, and we're going to bring in a lot of Hispanic stars and have them support Lawler on the undercard or in the semi-mains, and you bring in your L.A. Parks in. You have your, you know, your Lucha Brothers. You're bringing Roosh in and stuff. So it's like, you know, it's definitely something different because it's not the WWE. It's, you know, there's some, you know, there's some guys who could cross over and work WWE, no problem, but it's getting its own identity, and it makes it interesting in that aspect.
Yeah, and they're definitely trying to be kind of the territory's super show in some ways, if you think about it, with like the kind of nostalgics they're doing. Even, I mean, one of the show that we're going to review tonight, I think the Tommy Dreamer, Barrington Hughes team, I mean, that screams to me Florida territory with Dusty Rhodes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of both guys fit into that Dusty Rhodes mold in some way. Dreamer being like a guy who really liked Dusty Rhodes, Barrington Hughes being like the similar type of character. So yeah, I mean, to me, it's just like that, you know, he's trying to do the super show best of all the stuff that worked in the territories. I mean, and
yeah, I mean, Barrington Hughes, he wasn't Dusty Rhodes, but he was there was always this giant fat guy in every promotion in a territory. Be it Jerry Blackwell in the AWA to the Hillbillies in the NWA or in WWF. I mean, they're always this big guy who you just bounce off of and work around all their limitations and stuff, and that's what Barrington Hughes is and stuff.
Right, exactly.
Action, I'm going down there for Action, the Making Towns and the Scenic City Rumble, and they announced, did you see what match they announced?
I've seen them announce a couple matches, but which one are you talking about?
This one for Action, they announced Slim J versus Anthony Henry.
Yes.
And that's really raising the bar and setting the standard for the shows all week, if you ask me.
Yeah, and I mentioned to Matt in private just really smart promoter booking there, or, you know, promoter mind that he did there, because he announced that match around the same time that Alan Ferreira just tweeted out about Slim J, and Slim J was getting a little bit of buzz on Twitter, people talking about how good he is, and then you announce a match like that I think is very enticing to people who would be interested in seeing Slim J 2018.
It really would be, especially if anyone's watched. Did you ever watch the Slim J Freddie Ahai series? I think it was 2015.
Yes.
Incredible stuff. I'm expecting something similar to that. I was like, wow, it's kind of like, you know, it feels like, you know, they're obviously the three promotions are working together in a capacity, not like, you know, not thick as thieves, but, you know, clearly they're all friendly. I mean, obviously the Hales is their family, and there's definitely an affiliation there. But it's like, you know, first I'm seeing Anthony Henry and what's his name? Slim J. I'm talking at the Scenic City. Joey Lynch.
Yes.
And I'm like, whoa, that's awesome. And then not to be outdone, Action goes, okay, I'll see you, and I'll go all in. I'm gonna go all in here with Anthony Henry and Slim J for potential, you know, show of the weekend, and there's still plenty more to be announced. So I'm really, really excited on this whole weekend and stuff. I'm so glad I'm going down for that. It's just, you know, it's one thing. You know, I really want to, like, I'm contemplating. I'm a big Chicago Bear fan. And like, you know, the Indies here in Austin always run on Sunday. And in the past, because my Bears have stunk for the last, like, 10 years, it really hasn't really affected me. But, you know, they're now in the play, they're going into the playoffs. And, like, there's no way in hell I'm going to a wrestling show on a Sunday when my Bears are playing. And it just drives me nuts that they, Inspire has a really fun show with Nick Gage working MJF on top, along with ACH and Ricky Starks, along with a host of other matches, and it's just, it's like, man, Yeah, it's like, what do I do? Do I want to watch my football, my team that I'm haven't been they haven't done it for me in years, or go to a live wrestling event? And it seems like I'm gonna have to pass on a live wrestling event because of my loyalty to the Bears and stuff.
Well, I can't blame you. You got to make those choices, but yeah, I mean, I think Anthony Henry, big weekend coming up there that you're going to be at, and then big weekends the past couple of weeks, winning titles in two different companies, yep. Having big matches in different companies, and looking like already a front runner to be one of these guys to jump in and fill in a spot. And I think a guy that me and you were both talking about as yeah. being a potential at that level. And then it seemed like he hit a lull or a little, you know, a patch where he was not necessarily getting his high profile stuff. And now it seems like he's ramping right back up when that spot is open up for him. And I think he's a guy who slots right in there to being, you know, a top level guy in a lot of different
promotions. Yeah, he's definitely, I mean, now without the function of everything going on, he's clearly one of the more important indie figures probably in 2019 where we see, you know.
Right, and I think the first time I was exposed to him was the first SCI in the match against Jimmy Rave, specifically being the one that stood out from the weekend when I remember, I think I DM'd Dylan about him, you know, instantly. And that was before Dylan was even booking the show, but I knew he would know who he was. I said, oh, you know, who was that guy? He stood out, and ever since then been paying attention. And it's just interesting the way that everything kind of comes full circle, man.
Yeah, it's always fun when you get in on the kind of the ground floor of somebody and watch the rise. Like, you know, I was watching Wildside when AJ Styles was there, and I picked him as a future star. And I mean, I picked a couple guys from Wildside. Also Jason Cross being another one. But when you're there on the ground floor watching it, it just gets so exciting. It's kind of like King Justice with us in a way, you know.
Right.
We were there on the ground floor on his like debut match, and it's fun to watch and that's probably some part of the reason why I was so frustrated with CWF this year is like you have guys you're invested in, and because they did such a great good job bringing him along and booking him as a young boy year one, and then it just felt like he was like in a circle in that company in a way where, you know, he was just kind of like interacting with the same people that he did last year. There wasn't a whole lot of growth, and I mean, yeah, I know there was a big creative upturn, but last year it just seemed like he was on the cusp of something, and then never there was never ever a payoff with him and Trevor and stuff, which kind of sucked.
It's not going to be happening now.
Yeah, exactly. So when you get when you feel like something's going in a direction, and I know everything changes in wrestling, so that's part of it. That's part of the frustration sometimes, is you just feel like as a fan sometimes the rug gets pulled out from under you, or Charlie Brown and Lucy pulls the football from you, type of thing. So as a wrestling fan, you know how Charlie Brown feels a lot of the time and stuff.
That's for sure.
Good news on final good news on my fantasy football league. I won it this year. In an incredible turnaround. I started the season 2-6, won five games in a row in the final in the season, didn't get the seventh seed in the playoffs, and then won it all. So I won $1,400 on that. So
nice.
That's a nice little bonus for just getting on a win streak. So anything can happen. But hey, let's get into the wrestling. Unless there's anything else you want to hit on.
No, that's it for me.
All right, man. First, condolences go out to our buddy JB. Notre Dame lost. Sorry, brother. I mean, they had a hell of a season. You know, keep your head up. Stay with the positive on that, man. We open up with MLW Fusion, and we get Selena De La Renta promo. She's coming out and cutting a promo. So you know what that means. That means Conan's out. And they have a kind of a war of the words here. And, you know, they kind of have pretty good chemistry together, Conan and Selena. They kind of set up what's going to go on. It was setting up a Conan-Loki match. So for the future, which is next week's show. What'd you think of this, man?
I was fine with everything except for what it accomplished, which is that matchup that I don't, to me, doesn't make any sense. I don't know why you do Conan versus Loki, unless...
You do it because Conan's the Miami boy, and I think they think it's that, honestly, I mean, they're going to do a guy... I haven't seen the match, so I might be completely wrong, but I was... It's going to be total smoke and mirrors, I'm assuming, because Conan really can't physically shot. And Conan was never a great shakes, is incredible, known as a standout blowaway worker anyway, even when he was in shape and stuff and not shot body shot. But it's because he's Miami, and I bet it's going to become more of an angle with Lawler getting involved type stuff. And I think they thought they'd have some type of special heat because of Conan's connection to the city.
Yeah, and I think they did a good job of setting that up, especially talking about his history, not really working very much in Miami. Yeah. So I thought that was done pretty well. So I'll give him that. But yeah, I just don't see booking the match.
I get it. But he also had a big history, in WCW to bring like A-Rod out, a Florida Marlin type guy. I mean, people now remember him as a Yankee, but he was a Florida Marlin. And so he does have ties. So it's just like we're talking about it being a territory thing. It's kind of like a territory thing. Like even now in Memphis, Jerry Lawler can still draw a crowd. I think that's they're trying to hope for magic being struck here. Maybe not blowing a match that they need to do, but just a match where they can still draw with Conan on top. Because of the circumstances, which won't present itself by very often,
Yeah, and it works. I mean, I guess I get that. It works as just a match to have that will draw, but doesn't waste any matches that are high profile that you'll want to save for later. Especially with what they're doing. Like you talk about, they're running multiple different markets. They're using different talents to help stand
draw
out
crowd,
in the different
yeah.
markets, draw crowds with people who aren't getting bookings all around. So... honestly, probably pretty smart, if not a choice that I'm into.
I can totally understand that, because, it's definitely not going to produce a great match. But I think it could, honestly, all I expect out of a match is maybe 7 minutes, and five of it is Conan selling, and maybe getting a minute and a half cut off, and then a fucked finish, or a cheat finish that has Lawler come out. To save the day, and him and Conan are standing tall at the end. That's what better happen. Or they just beat the living tar out of the heels, will just lay out Lawler and Conan, but I don't want to see my two big baby faces of the company. And Conan, I'm not saying he's the big baby face, but his affiliation is the second biggest thing in the company. So I don't want to see them both laid out. So we'll see how it plays out. Then we get a Hart Foundation promo. This is weird as fuck.
Yeah, I did not
fucking get... cats. I don't give a shit about fucking Teddy Hart's fucking cats.
Yeah, not for me. I was not into this. It was just
pointless. Again, it's a little... sometimes they do a little too inside baseball, and the whole cat thing is just way too fucking inside. But then we get a David Boy Smith Pillman Jr. match versus Dreamer and Hughes that we referenced earlier. And you know what? I thought the heels did a really good job stooging for Barrington Hughes and Dreamer. I liked the faces shined early up as a basic Southern tag. It worked for what it was. Again, on paper, you're not expecting this to light it up, but I mean it was effective in what it needed to do, I believe. What about you?
Yeah, and I all of everything you said was spot on, same way that I felt. The only extra thing, the only extra note is that it just Dreamer is not in a good way when he's like in a tag team with Barrington Hughes, and that's who he's counting on to do the work rate. I mean, Dreamer is getting clearly blown up, tagging out real fast, spending almost no time in the ring. He's got Barrington Hughes being the work rate of the team. That's not a great situation there, but the match structure and everything else itself was done really well.
Yeah, you can hide a lot of deficiencies in a Southern tag, I'll tell you. The most bulletproof formula in the world. Roosh promo. Yeah. Shows why he's a top guy in Mexico. I mean, he cuts a good Mexican cut a pretty good promo, I thought. What about you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I get it. I mean, I get why Roosh is popular. Totally. It's, you know, for me, I even would probably like Roosh more. It's just, and here in MLW is a great option for me to get to watch him. Because, again, my issues just come down to Lucha Libre production. But, yeah, I mean, he's a good star and works well for what he does. So I'm actually excited to be able to see some of the guys like Roosh here in MLW. It's kind of similar to when they used to send a lot more of the bigger name luchadors over to New Japan. It seems like they've really calmed down on that, covering more or filling up more with American talent, especially with the All Elite guys in there right now. And then now looking like probably more of the Samoans and more of the Australian scene from Fale's Dojo being the focus. So getting to see luchadors coming through, and not just the young boy luchadors, but the stars, the big stars too, coming through MLW is going to be interesting, because it'll be my chance to get exposed to guys that I would not necessarily get to watch as much, just because I don't like watching lucha as much.
Yep. Then we got a Hiro down at LA Park versus DJZ. I don't know why they're doing mirror spots early on, because, I mean, they haven't developed the story of these guys really knowing each other. I mean, I get it. It's easy pop from the crowd when you do mirror spots, but I feel those things work better when the talent's familiar with one another. And there's loads of big moves here. It didn't do anything for me, but it just felt, you know, it felt like, hey, this is our... it's our big, here's our spot fest match. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. And it was, I mean, yeah, these guys, it was fine for spot fest, but not necessarily, neither one of these guys are like A-level spot fest guys, really. So it's not like that it's going to stand out for that for me. It really takes those top level guys clicking it on all cylinders. We talked about it in the past, but stuff like Osprey Ricochet, when it, you know, the big matches really hit, that's where I'll get into it. But yeah, when it's like this, I'm not going to get into it. It's a little bit too nothing. The mirror spots definitely irked me huge to begin with. Two guys who have no familiarity with each other really doing that just is so pointless. So I get what place it's filling in the card and what the idea is, and I understand that that's a popular thing, so it's not necessarily a bad call to have it, but it doesn't service me.
Yeah, and the matches that I've really liked at DJZ have a lot more substance to it, because he's more than just a spot fest guy. So I think it takes him down and hurts his chances of getting over. Conan interview. excuse me. Really strong stuff. Setting up his match with Loki, setting up the whole background of it. What do you think?
Yeah, done super well. I mean, it really shows. I mean, because he was feeling a little bit stale even here early on, and then I thought that in Lucha Underground he was really good early on, and then just kind of overstayed his welcome. So it's
I don't know if he even overstayed his welcome in Lucha Underground. It felt like he was great, and then he just disappeared.
Yeah, you know, I guess, like, that's more what really happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, it actually is working here again with the production, kind of the way that it's doing and building him up. And he's a guy who I think you can get it out, can get a lot out of his aura, his history, his, you know, what they say, all the stuff that they say about him. He's done really good to cultivate that star power with a certain segment of the fans who pay attention. And a lot of that, I mean, you know, it's no secret, a lot of that does come with the fact that he was a guy that was feeding information to Meltzer. So his, you know, kind of his credentials, his resume is bolstered a little bit because of basically a guy that people consider the biggest historian in wrestling has always been pretty forgiving to his self-aggrandizing. Yes.
And he's the key to, for me, Conan. I mean, he's a pipeline for the Mexican talent. I mean, even though, like, Court was booked in L.A. Park in 2004, so, I mean, I'm sure he has a connection to him anyway. But, yeah, but Conan, you know, facilitates a lot of the talent. I think he's a good idea guy who does better when there's someone helps him editing stuff, because sometimes I just remember watching some of his stuff in promo as Azteca Conan, and he got the ECW bug, and he would have done better. There was like some great matches with just loaded up bullshit schmoz finishes when I screamed ECW because he was affiliated with them at the time. Andrew Everett versus Desmond Xavier. Two guys I like. Prefer Andrew Everett as the Southern babyface, but it's not a character he plays often. This is like the worst I've seen Desmond Xavier ever, I think. He seemed really off at times, and so did Everett. These guys didn't click at all. I thought this thing was a train wreck. Or unless this that was the plan. I mean, it just seemed weird. Like someone was fucked up weird because some of the stuff that was blown was just, I don't know what the hell was going on. What do you think?
Yeah, it was. There was definitely some off. There was definitely something interesting about Desmond's posture, especially if you notice when he posted up top before setting up for the final finish, he looked like he almost lost his balance a little bit.
Yeah, which is
interesting. He kind of saved himself and did a little face or whatever. But that's definitely, like you said, for Desmond, that is not common. I mean, he was already really good, but the Dragon Gate training has obviously sharpened up his game, and he was a step off here. I don't know what was up. Andrew's been out
outside at one point, and like he did a splash that no one was even close to.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew's been out for a bit, obviously, so there's could be some ring rust there. He's also, but I mean, you know, we know he's also always at the CWF school, so it's not necessarily that he doesn't have the chance to be in the ring as much as he wants, so I don't know. There was a little bit of a knee thing, and it looked like Everett was reaching at the hurt, injured knee, but then it didn't really play into the match at all, so it makes me believe it wasn't even selling. It was probably just legit. So, I don't know, maybe Everett's just not quite there for a match like this, and just like you said, I mean, he's honestly better suited not just having matches like this. My number one favorite position for Andrew Everett, and always will be, was as tagging with Trevor, selling his ass off for Trevor's hot tags, especially in that, you know, the DDT4 and PWG that people hate, but I loved because I was in the building there live, and I really, Andrew Everett sucked me in for this show-long storyline. So, you know, that was where I thought I've seen him look the best that he's ever looked. So he doesn't necessarily need to be as smooth as he can be with his big high flying and doing spot stuff if he was kind of focusing in on that.
Also, what do you think about it? Neither one of these guys are bases either, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's true. So it does make that tough too.
Like Ray back in the day, his best, he looked great. His best matches were usually with Psychosis because Psychosis was a base for him.
Right.
Neither of these guys were bases. So,
That's another one that gets overlooked. And we talked about it before. I always, for me personally, I'd rather big guy, small guy, than small guy versus small guy. And then also, I like big guys versus big guys more, usually, than a small guy versus small guy match for that reason. I mean, you need someone to base, you know?
Then we get a hype video for the Low-Key versus Lawler match. I thought they've done a great job with this. That's with the whole angle. And I think they did a great job with this hype video. What about you?
Yeah, and they've really turned it up within the past couple of weeks when they've officially announced it. You know what I mean? So that helps too.
Then we get a Lawler interview followed by a Lawler gotch hype video. This all worked too, man. What about you?
Yeah, I thought that this was great, but I think that I didn't necessarily think that Lawler's promo here matched what we ended up getting in the match.
Fair enough. And then the match, which was a no-holds-barred, kind of after Matt Riddle's Bloodsport. I really liked it. It was in the 3-star range. I like Gotch after the arm, big stiff strikes. Fun match, you know. And they kept it interesting, and they worked it. I thought they worked it well for what they needed to do. What were your thoughts here?
I liked the match. I thought that even with it being short, or feeling kind of short for what the setting was, they did really good to pack it full. I thought it shined Lawler up quite a bit. Looked great. I thought that throughout it really got to a point where it was clear that Lawler just outclassed Gotch, which I thought was the perfect way to do the match, to show that Lawler is definitely above him. Because I could have seen them trying to go more 50-50 just because of Gotch and Lawler's, you know, history and friendship and everything. But they kind of didn't do that, which I thought was smart.
Yeah, because Lawler's Pennsylvania is the top guy. So, yeah, he shouldn't be doing 50-50 with no one.
No, exactly. So at the end of it, it looked like he handily beat Gotch. But that, I think, to me, that was my issue where I talk about the promo and the match not connecting as much. Coming into it, it felt like Lawler was real heated for a blood feud type match. And then this had some heated segments to it, but it didn't feel like a big time blood feud blow off. And I get why, because you want to have that with the Loki match, but it just felt like his promo coming into it felt like that's what he was setting up. So I thought both parts were good, the promo and the match. I just felt like they felt a little bit disjointed. And it may go into the fact that MLW tapes promos and matches and stuff a little bit out of order, or were. And hopefully that kind of stuff is, you talked about it, going to kind of disappear moving forward, because they are moved to live tape, like live shows, I guess, primarily moving forward. And so with that, hopefully some of that kind of wonkiness will start to disappear.
And part of that is creative too, if you look at it, Tim, is like you're building, the main objective is to build Lawler and Loki, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then they did the turn on Lawler in the middle of this build, so Lawler has to deal with Gotch, and it's personal. But it, you don't want, yeah, it is tough. And I mean, I don't blame anybody here, because it's, I put up for creative for making Lawler fight too many battles on one front at this point.
Right. And it felt
it
like
should be focused on Loki. And the Gotch, it felt like, yeah, okay, it was an interesting angle. And he got that Gotch, and he got Lawler kind of by himself in a way. Because, you know, a babyface doesn't need a group. And Lawler's clearly the babyface in the program. You don't hear many. I mean, how many babyfaces in the history in wrestling, when you think about it, were at a posse? It just doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't really run that way. So I understand why they need to get Gotch away from him. But it felt like it maybe should have. I don't know. I felt down to creative, because yeah. Okay, so we now, yeah, you don't want to take away the shine of the Loki match, but it kind of makes this sidestep kind of lackluster because of it.
Yeah, and I thought, and they rushed through it. I mean, with the turn, the angle, and then this feeling like the blow off of the feud was real fast for a guy who should be focusing, like you said, on the Loki stuff. I would have liked it if this had been set up a little bit sooner, because we were talking about it months ago. So again, like I said, with the taping schedule now going to be more seemingly dynamic as they're doing live stuff more, I think that that kind of stuff will hopefully shore up and it will be better moving forward.
Like the Gotch feud would have worked better if the turn happened months ago, like you said, and instead of us getting Lawler versus Jake Hager, or Lawler versus Jimmy Havoc, or Lawler versus Sammy Callahan, it would have worked better if you had Simon Gotch in that role months ago, focused with the focus feud as more of than just an afterthought part of the Loki angle, and then you could have been focused more on Loki, you know.
Yeah, exactly, and it probably would have worked better too, because it always having a real feud that you can kind of sink your teeth into is going to help to get somebody over more than just beating, you know, Monster of the Week, which kind of ended up being what Lawler was doing.
Yeah, exactly. NXT UK number 19. We get Sid Skull out front and in front of the crowd, and he gets to introduce Johnny Saint. I'm guessing they moved Sid Skull into this role because Saint, maybe because of his age, isn't remembering the lines, and that's probably not part of history of, and this is not a knock against Johnny Saint, this is not part of his DNA, this is not what his wrestling that he was brought up on was remembering scripted lines, so maybe that's why they moved Sid Scala, because this kind of just like set up, it felt like Sid Scala was almost like was there just to kind of carry Satan in some of these segments, and that's a shame because, you know, Satan's a big figure, but it's just not him. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that's definitely it. I mean, in general, I think you can have a little bit less of the authority figure kind of there, and I think that could have worked to just kind of have him be more limited, but that's just not the way that they do things. So they need someone who can carry a lot of talking and remembering lines and all of that. And so Skull is probably perfect for that.
Yeah, and like they totally used Satan with sound bites in a lot of this stuff, you know?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, yeah, I can definitely see it that being part of it. You're wanting a guy who's more polished and able to deliver what, you know, the big promo.
Yeah, I like Skull in the role. I mean, I think he does a good job with it. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so he introduces Johnny Sane here, and they talk about January 12th, we'll get a takeover. A lot of pressure on these guys, because takeovers have a long history of being kick-ass shows, and I think these guys can pull it off. But man, I don't want to say aimless, but I'm a little nervous about their undercard connecting. But hopefully they'll prove me wrong. Do you feel they'll knock it out of the park? I mean, nothing's really been announced. I mean, we got a Tony Storm Rhea Ripley match announced, which we'll talk about in a second, but. I mean, we've been watching the TV, and I still don't know what all the matches are going to be announced, really. I mean, I think I know a few, so I don't know.
I don't have a feel. I'm with you. I don't have a feel that there's too much real direction that makes sense to build up into a takeover right now, with, like you said, the quality that people expect from takeover.
Yeah.
You can't just do it as like a super card. It needs to feel like a big deal, or at least it should try to feel like a big deal. So we'll see.
Obviously Dunn is going to be working someone. I'm assuming Coffee.
Coffee makes sense to me.
And then I'm guessing we're going to get a Mastiff versus Eddie Dennis match.
Maybe, but I feel like that already got announced as happening. Like,
okay.
On the next TV or something.
Okay, well, then we're getting Tony Storm and Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Sure.
I would assume Mustache Mountain versus Gibson and
Drake, yeah, for the tag titles, probably.
And then I'd have a Travis Banks match. I think he's the X Factor in all this.
Banks and Devlin, probably, honestly, would make the most sense, with Devlin getting a clean win that could. I mean, Banks can sell his ass off, so. I think Devlin really kicking the shit out of Banks to help put him over even more as the most vicious heel, even though he's, you know, a little guy, I think would probably be the smart money there. But also, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the other thing. Do you have the other guys in a tag match? Do you have Flash Morgan Webster and Andrews versus Axel Dieter Jr. Or Marcel Bennett, whatever his gimmick name is, and what's his name? The guy who just lost the Evolve title.
Fabian Aichner.
Yeah, Aichner. Are they going to do a tag? Yeah, it's the whole thing. There's all these moving parts that I don't know. You know, most of the time when a show is 12 days away, you have an idea on paper where they're going, and I don't know.
Because, I mean, all of this seems like it was taped, and it doesn't seem like it was taped with the takeover in mind. Like, it doesn't feel like they were building to a takeover at the time that they were putting this show together.
It feels like right now, these show they just started is the new block of shows, and takeover was just announced, and everything that happened beforehand was just filler because they didn't know what the hell they were doing. They just started taping. I'm a little nervous about them. You don't want to have a mediocre first takeover coming out of this brand when the bar has been set so high. Pressure's on, boys. Girls, Tony Storm is out and wants a title shot at takeover, and Johnny Sane approves. And I gotta say, Tony time is a terrible line.
Yeah.
Drop that shit. That I've had, like, I have my boss will I mean, I had an old boss named Steve May. He used to make me show up 15 minutes early to work, and he called it May time. And so that's probably why I have this Tony time sounds terrible, too. And again, man, Tony Storm's not clicking with me here. I don't know what it is. Is it just weird posture?
She's got awkward posture. She's not a great talker. She doesn't, to me, her facials don't work well to get stuff over. This feels like instantly devaluing her after the history of the Mae Young Classic winner got a main roster title shot in the past, and now she's asking for a NXT UK title shot. I don't know about that. Like, yeah, I mean, it felt like they were excited and high on her, and maybe this is what they think of as high on someone, but her being a focal point of NXT UK doesn't feel like a high spot to me in this company, in the company the size of, WWE.
And that's another thing, a big difference between being an indie worker and then having to do weekly television where you got to do promos and do character work and grow as a character and do different aspects. And when you don't have a manager who can come out and just talk for you, it's things that she never really had to focus on. Probably the only thing she really had to focus on working on indies is how am I going to get my match over? Now it's about how am I going to get my character over and my stupid catchphrase, Tony time.
Yeah.
So there's a, creative's not helping her either by giving her Tony time, unless that was her call. I mean, then shame on her. God, that's such a terrible babyface line. I'm sorry. I don't mean to bag on her because I know she's a lot of people's favorites, but she is not clicking for me in the Schumacher household right now. Kenny Williams versus Jordan Devlin. I found this absolutely fascinating. We've seen Devlin in a lot of incarnations here and a lot of different aspects of his game, but this is the first time we've seen him on NXT UK go in, get the victory, but still make his opponent all in the same breath. And this shows that Devlin's a ring general. I thought this was fantastic. I thought he gave a lot to Williams early on with a really fun shine, giving Williams all these great high spots. But this is just another aspect of Devlin in becoming a great worker, and this was him making someone while he's winning. I mean, I can't put over enough how good this match was in the aspect of Devlin making a guy, which we haven't seen him do really. We've seen him have a great match with Pete Dunne. We've seen him have good matches, but this is somebody now here. There's this young talent we think a lot of. We want you to still go over, but we need you to make them all in the same breath. And that's a lot harder than people realize. It's one thing to win. You can make yourself look good by winning constantly, but it's like Hogan. I mean, he always looked good when he won, but even sometimes he made his opponents look like dog shit. Devlin, I thought, was fantastic in making Williams and still making his character at the same time. What do you think of all that?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on everything. I mean, we haven't seen it here, but Devlin has been showing off this kind of talent in OTT, being able to make everything feel bigger because he makes his opponents look so great, even when, I mean, he kind of got over being the guy who was facing all the imports coming into Australia, so he was always Ireland, so he's always getting the big matches, so, the high caliber talent, but he also did make sure to make his opponents look really good, so it looked like he meant something when he won, so showing that off here is great. Kenny Williams is an absolutely fantastic seller and has been for a while, so obviously, he's the perfect guy to do something like this with, because you can get him over because everything looks so good, and then he hits some big spots, and he's just, people buy into him. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, everything you said, done really well. Just both these guys, obviously, on paper, it was something you'd expect, but this is where it's like, okay, NXT UK is really capitalizing on stuff, and Devlin is one of those guys for sure. I mean, I was not the biggest Devlin fan in OTT. I appreciated the talent, but I'm starting to really enjoy this guy here.
Yes, that's where I'm with you here. And I think Williams, I think they could easily, just off this match, it feels like they could push him into like the Andrews / Morgan Webster group, maybe just like a notch below them at this point in time, because I think the guy has a lot of talent. And then Devlin cuts his kick-ass promo, you know, a really great promo from the guy. He's really a standout performer on this show. What do you think of the promo?
Yeah, definitely great stuff from the promo as well. I mean, yes, Devlin is, I think, a guy that was maybe being, I wouldn't say overlooked, but wasn't a guy that I think coming into this people had huge buzz on, and I think that coming out of it he might end up being the guy. I mean, he's almost feeling suited to be the one to replace Dunn as the ace of the company soon enough, especially knowing that
like
he can,
he's one of the few guys I feel has gotten over legitimately without a gigantic push, you know.
Right, and the other side of it too is that he's a guy that we've seen in OTT can cover the babyface side, so having a top ace for the company is, like I said, a role that he can fill. Meanwhile, you could say Gibson is close to being as over, but Gibson is really unproven as a babyface. I mean, there's no, I can't think of any real examples of Gibson as a top drawing, or not even top drawing, but a popular top babyface anywhere.
Yeah, so I don't think he will be a top babyface. It's probably very problematic to get him over. I think it'd be stupid to try. I think right now, I think Gibson's so talented and versatile that they're using him to shore up the tag team division right now, because they're throwing belts out there, and I mean, Mustache Mountain needs some people to work with, and I think Gibson's team is going to be one of them for a little bit right off the bat. I think that's why I think Devlin's getting his little run as like a potential top level heel, singles heel, because I feel they needed Gibson overness to go into the tag division and help spark that division a little bit, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Marcel Bartel next week. What a shit name, but I love Axel Dieter Jr., so I think he'll be perfect for this brand. What about you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll always say that I think that maybe it's kind of putting him down a little bit lower than his ceiling can really be, but he will be good for the division because he is good and he's wrestled a lot of these guys, so he can have matches with them, but not a bunch. You know, being a WXW guy, they really didn't get around Europe as much, so there's also a lot of fresh matchups still.
Yeah, it just felt like it was a logjam in NXT where I don't think he was going to break out, honestly.
Yeah, and that's definitely true.
Then we get a Saint Escala interview. Leah Ripley interrupts, and we get them setting up Ripley and Deonna Piazza for next week's show. That should be good. I mean, I think Piazza's fantastic. So what about you?
Yeah, no, she definitely is. I would just say that this kind of promo setup and then the match itself, I think, unfortunately, did a little bit of disservice to Ripley as a heel, because I don't know, she comes across here like a fighting champion asking for a challenger, and I felt like the match kind of echoed that actually a little bit. So it seems like that might even actually be the way that they're going, and I think they're really missing the boat on someone who's proven that she can be a really awesome top heel for them, as opposed to that, and I think she would be better suited.
And it might be because of Toni Storm failing miserably as the babyface.
Right, and that might be that what they're thinking is that they've got a bigger, better Toni Storm, but
they're thinking, well, we could easily go with Ginny or whatever in the heel side role.
Right. No, and that, I mean, you're right about, and that is a way to think about it, and it's probably smart, but it's a bummer for me because it felt like Ripley could have gotten somewhere really cool as a heel.
I totally agree with you. I know I like her better as a heel, and I think she'd be a fighting champion, but I think, I just don't, for baby faces, I think you need to have a special spark. I don't think she quite has that.
Yeah.
But she definitely has a mean streak as a heel. Dan Maloney versus Eddie Dennis. But Mastiff attacks Dennis, and we get this big schmoz thingy. It was an angle. It was a piece of business, so it worked, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, it was fine for an angle and what they were doing. I thought that the standout thing was Mastiff facials in ring at while delivering the punishment to Maloney, just showing how pissed off he was at Dennis, trying to call him out, come after him, all that. I thought that that was the standout kind of part of the segment, but the angle and the, like you said, piece of business that it was just completely punched my mic. Was just kind of mundane.
Yeah, then we get a Ligero, and he's interrupted by Coffee and whatever again. Crew,
Dallas.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't roll off the tongue easy. It was all right. Fine. What do you think?
It's fine.
Then we get Zach Gibson's Liverpool guide. I thought this was good.
Awesome.
I thought that's the best thing I've seen them really do. Fantastic.
I loved this. And I thought it was really smart for a guy who talks about Liverpool's number one and everything he does for Liverpool to have him heal on the city after he spends so much time talking it up to help just completely heal so he's not getting cheered in Liverpool. I thought that was super smart.
Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, and done super well.
Yep. Then we got Stars and Tucker versus Huxley and Tyson T-Bone. What do you think?
Nah, don't really care. Whatever.
Yep, exactly. I don't give a shit about any of these guys.
Who cares?
Isla Dawn promo, but she's interrupted by Ginny. I'm not feeling Dawn right now. But I can get behind Ginny. She's always fantastic. Especially in these segments. This is her bread and butter. As opposed to Toni Storm, you know?
Yeah, and she just oozes, disdain for everyone. It's so perfect, because even if I like Isla Dawn, I think she's got potential. I don't think that her, I talked about that I didn't really like the program or mini program that they did to set up her title match with Rhea Ripley, feeling like it kind of devalued the title, all that. But it's funny the way that, I still thought, I think the look and the, kind of the way she's polished and all that was fine. But Ginny comes in and the disdain that she gets, it's that perfect kind of almost Mean Girl-esque thing where as soon as you see Ginny look at her, then you start judging yourself for thinking that Isla Dawn is okay. Because you're like, Ginny's right. She's kind of, but you're also like, God, she's such a fucking bitch about everything. It's so good.
Nicer about it.
Exactly. Yeah, Ginny's great. I mean, she just naturally just oozes this, just bitchiness.
And then we get Joe Coffey versus Ligero. And my God, I thought this was incredible what they did here. I don't want to say I give it 3.5 stars, but I thought Ligero was incredible at just letting Coffee beat the living fucking shit out of him. Bumping and feeding and eating all of Coffee's power moves. Ligero made Coffee feel like he was a 6'5" monster, you know? Coffee was just doing big man spots, Ligero bumping big for him. I thought Ligero was the perfect opponent for Coffee in the sense of making him. Love the spare to the back by Coffee. Focusing his work on the back, all these big moves and power spots. And I thought it was the perfect type of match to get Coffee over. And I think this is going to be Ligero's role going in. Is going to be putting over lesser talents who they're trying to push. He's going to be like that. He's going to be Bret Hart in the 80s. Putting over these stiffs. Coffee's not a stiff. That's being pretty rough. But the Ligero's role is going to be as the human ping pong, putting over talents who they want to push and they want to make look good on TV. And I think that's what's going to be Ligero's role. And this was stage one in it. Step one. What do you think of this?
Yeah, it was great because it felt out of nowhere, kind of. It didn't seem like it made sense, but then it did, because it feels like Coffee is on the warpath to the title. But Ligero's been winning matches, and they've been talking about him as a guy, that could be going for the title, finally trying to prove himself. So in a way, it's like it felt like that kind of two guys who are on the upswing finally crossing paths. So it just shows how that kind of sports presentation works so fucking well. Because, like I said, for background story-wise, it didn't it wasn't set up. There wasn't a big build. It was literally just this episode. Gallus show up and fuck with Coffee or with Liguero, and then it's like we're wrestling. But then it did make sense because you're like, oh yeah, both these guys have been winning a lot of matches. This match could mean something in ramifications for a title shot. So I just thought that that like really shows that that booking where you build up into it, just having two guys that are on a hot streak is enough to make a match feel important. You know, you don't need a lot of
give you that equity.
Yeah, so you're just into both guys, and then
and that's the other thing. If you make wins and losses matter, then you get consequences. You know, it makes it frack easier than having to explain how are you getting a title shot? You just lost. Like for me, the most annoying thing I've ever I hate when. I mean, the WWE does it all the time, was when they have a four-way or a three-way, and Dolph Ziggler loses, okay? But next week he gets the title shot. Well, he just lost a three-way for the title shot. Why does he get it first before the guy won it?
Right, and that happens way too much. But I thought this was done super well. The back stuff, like you talked about, was great from Liguero. I loved he hits a big flipping senton off the top, but is selling the back on the landing. I think it's perfect. Liguero bumps huge, like you said. The big kind of keyword there is, you know, Coffee looks like a monster coming out of this, just a big bad ass kicker. And it's it's kind of a great matchup if it is what they do for Pete Dunne on the takeover, because you know Pete Dunne's got his whole bruiserweight thing, and I talked about it with Coffee really with his height coming across like. Coffee's the smallest heavyweight and Dunn's the biggest cruiserweight, you know, so they're meeting up even though, you know, in NXT UK it's treated as if Pete Dunne is, you know, he's the heavyweight champion. He's not looked at as a cruiserweight, but in some ways that's kind of physically what they look like. So it's a really cool little matchup for that. And then this is the great way to put that over going into it is like, yeah, he might be small for a heavyweight, but he's a big bad dude who can throw around this luchador like nothing, you know, and just really kick ass. So that gets you excited for that matchup.
And they, UK 19, in the books, you know, again, kind of an uneven show where you got some good, you got some bad. But, you know, I mean, I still give it a thumb. Good, solid show. What about you?
Yeah. It's feeling like NXT UK is hitting its stride. They're going on, they have some good, like, just basic tenements for a backbone. It feels like the takeover is kind of not necessarily in the focus and the number one kind of thing. Like, it doesn't look like everything is driving to the takeover as well as it could, but that's okay because it did feel like it was kind of thrown out of nowhere for them, but at least they've got a good backbone.
Yeah, I think they're doing the takeover a little early. I still think they need another month to establish the personalities and the pecking order, but you know, that's why I'm here and that's why Triple H is in charge. NXT UK 20, Zach Gibson and James Drake versus the Wild Boar and the Primate. I like Wild Boar and Primate. I think they have legs as that one of them wacky underneath tag teams. But I will say they did this one spot, the Gibson's rope spot with Primate was so telegraphed where they set up the heat. You see it happening a mile away. That's never good. But other than that, it was fine for what it was. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. I like the Boar Primate team all right, but it was a bummer because for me at least, Primate coming out with the mask on and the big orange beard sticking out of the bottom, I thought that it was the Marauders. I thought it was Mike Bird because Bird and Boar are a established tag team in Europe, you know, and they have really great chemistry. They had probably a low-level match of the year contender early in the year in a kind of a street fight against each other, and I think it was either Fight Club or Attack. It was really good, but then they also are a great tag team, so I was like, oh, cool. So I'm seeing Primate's kind of a letdown. Primate's okay. He's a, I think he's a Rampage Brown student, and he tags with Rampage Brown a lot. You can kind of see the influence a little bit, kind of just in the way he works and the way
totally
he looks.
Yeah, I can totally see the fingerprints on him,
And so they are probably a decent team. I think moving forward it could work, but it just felt like with them both wearing the masks and kind of the whole thing, it came across a little bit like a ripoff of the Marauders, but, you know, whatever. Part of it, too, is that Boar looks like that, so he's not going to not look like himself, so it is going to in some ways be reminiscent of that team, you know? I thought Gibson and Drake looked good for the most part. There was definitely that rope spot was a little bit bullshit, but I think that it did a pretty good job to help put over Drake and And Gibson moving forward, probably, like you said, being most likely being the team that faces Mustache Mountain for the tag titles.
Yeah.
I would assume that's where they're going.
Yeah, I feel bad for Drake because Gibson just so outclasses him and everything.
Right.
And then, and then he's the mouthpiece of the team. So, yeah, he's definitely the star of this team. And he cuts a good promo, right?
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, Drake really feels just there, but, you know, whatever.
And then we get a Mustache Mountain interview. Well, that was fine for what it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it, but these guys, they're perfect for NXT UK.
They're putting over how important the tag belts are to them, that Tyler Bate has already won NXT. He has already had his moment, but now Trent Seven wants to have this moment for both of them, blah, blah, blah. Good stuff.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing because you could have Bate winning the tag title, being the first tag champion, being the first singles champion. That would be interesting kind of storyline or whatever. So it feels important.
Agreed. Then we get a Dave Mastiff versus somebody, but Eddie Dennis attacks his opponent. Another good piece of business. They're doing a good job keeping these guys apart for the most part, you know. But in the same statement, but in the same stratosphere.
Yeah, and just keeping it, teasing it, but not giving away too much.
Then we get a Joseph Connors interview piece. That was a solid interview, but it's nothing no one really would remember 3 weeks from now. What do you think?
Yeah, the only thing that stands out to me is it's so reminiscent of Chris Hero's similar angle that was just happening at NXT, talking about the new toys and the shiny new. I mean, he's literally saying the exact same words. So
and Hero has the cred, indie cred that Joseph Connors doesn't have quite.
Yeah. So to me, that just it was a little whatever.
Like, you can believe Hero can, you know, like you can buy Hero saying it and believe Hero believes it. Joseph Connors just seems like delusional.
Right. Exactly.
Mark Andrews versus Marcel Bartel. What's going on here, man?
Bartel kind of showed off some of his greatest hit spots. He always looks great. He's a real thoroughbred type guy. Mark Andrews, this has been kind of the thing in NXT UK. He's lost a spark to me. He was a guy who was in my conversation for best baby faces not too long ago, and just not seeing it anymore. The fire.
I feel like
they're
using him to get other people over.
That's part of it too. Maybe he's just not as inspired to work really hard. But there's something. It feels like something's missing. Step off, and he is. Yeah, he's in the place to be putting people over more. He's still very good, but he's not at the level he used to be. Barthel, real solid here, but he was, I think, his best in a tag team. Hot and spicy as a babyface, as a heel in ring comp. So single stuff for him can get a little boring. He's very good. Obviously, like I said, thoroughbred, can wrestle his ass off, makes everything look legit, really can lay it in. And then, they're teasing a tag team here, so maybe that's smart. Maybe that's the way to go, putting together this tag team here. The first thing I thought of, though, with Fabian Aichner in his kind of all leather getup joining up with Axel Dieter Jr. Is it just, I don't know if you've seen, but there's in Fight Club, there's a stable that has CCK and Thatcher and Walter and Aussie Open, and they're called Schadenfreude, and this feels like Schadenfraud. It's like the knockoff version of it. But but it will be interesting to see them. I think they might be able to work as a tag team.
Okay. Yeah, it just feels, I'm with you on Andrews. It just feels like, then teaming him with, he's just lost a lot. And when you start losing a lot, even if you're doing the set up programs or set up things for other things, you're still a loser in it. And that he's getting painted with that in that corner of, hey, he's a guy who can make other people look good. Paintbrushed, and sometimes you end up being so good at that you don't have upward mobility. I think that's originally what the WWE had in mind, like with Daniel Bryan's character and stuff. Then we get a Toni Storm interview. God, well, you know, what, yeah. what it was all right. Please. Yeah.
I hate it because I was very high on Toni Storm this year. I mean, teasing again for the top 50. I think she's my highest rated female worker this year. But as a promo, she's just not there.
Yeah, I agreed. Charles Bank Package is good. And I think he's, again, I think he's going to be the... He used to be the X factor. Is going to be if this show will be a thumbs up, thumbs down. I think he's going to have a show stealer to make the show, I feel. But I hope I'm wrong. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can. I think he could. I think you're right. So, you know, we'll see what ends up happening with that.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a key mid-card match, so it's going to be big, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, he really could work for that, for their kind of workhorseman guy in the middle, the, you know, the kind of the Roddy in ROH kind of guy, has the just the killer matches on the mid-card that get the crowd fired up.
Yep.
And that's a good role for him, to be perfectly honest. But this promo package did really well. I thought I was like kind of rolling my eyes when it started, you know, promo package for a guy who's been around and done stuff. But I thought that they executed it pretty well.
Agreed. Then we got Rhea Ripley versus Deonna Purrazzo. And I like this match. I like the fun short shine by Piazza early on. Does an homage to Johnny Saint. Cool. Ripley takes over and works the midsection back. Ripley with a Kevin Von Erich body scissors was like, totally dug. Piazza escapes and takes Ripley down in the mat. The top rope exchange was pretty great. Really good match. I give it 3 stars. What do you think?
Yeah, super, super fair on that. I thought, my biggest issue was that there was some times where Rhea looked mean and aggressive and violent, but there wasn't super strong heel tendencies to me. Really felt like she had a straight up fight with Purrazzo. Maybe sold some of her strikes a little bit too much. I think she should have really undersold Purrazzo's strikes and stuff like that and oversold her grappling just to help kind of put over that. The virtuoso.
That's a good point. I think that's a valid point.
But she looked really good. She looked badass. She kicked ass. But like I said, I want to see a little bit more heel tendencies here. She really felt like a big badass that I think that the crowd is going to get behind. And I just think that they should probably focus on making her as heel as possible. And that doesn't necessarily mean... I mean, she could use a little bit more underhanded stuff. She doesn't necessarily have to cheat, but stuff like, you know what I mean? Grinding into someone's eyes a little bit or stuff like that. You know, those kind of just little underhanded stuff I think could help. Really just felt like a fair fight that she was just, you know, the big bully of. I just think that they'll miss the boat on her if they don't focus on having her be just a kick-ass heel. Get Toni coming out chasing her off afterwards again, I don't think it really helps because she hadn't really done anything to Purrazzo, and then she goes running from Toni. So I may not have done that, but I get where they're coming from. They want to get Toni over and they want to show that, but yeah, I don't know if I would have Toni running Rhea off, especially because Rhea already beat Toni before to win the NXT title, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, why is she running from her? But,
exactly.
You know, whatever.
I thought this show was a little bit more more focused, it felt. And then cut some of the badder parts out that 19 had. I thought it was a little more focused and stronger. What about you?
Yeah, that's definitely... this is looking good. There's not as much fat on this. A lot more, kind of everything seemed like it was going somewhere a little bit more. So hopefully, especially with I think the finish too helped because you're building to a match that we know is on the takeover card. So that helps to make everything kind of feel like it's driving to that focus of the takeover show.
And now we're at NXT and we get Io Shirai versus Lacey Evans versus Mia Yim versus Bianca Belair. I thought this was really good. Clearly Bianca has it. You know, her charisma just jumps off the stage. She feels like a star. I felt this is the best Lacey Evans has looked since her Dakota Kai match. She just looked like an ass kicker here. I thought they had a lot of fun spots here. great near fall on Evans's punch, I thought. And I thought the finish was just flat out awesome. I give it 3.25. This match far exceeded my expectations. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought that they gave plenty to Evans, like you said, to make her look good. I thought from the jump they did a great job. This reminds me of the kind of the Four Horsewomen four-way and stuff from NXT in the women's division around that time, where the characters, I always would talk about it, the characters were so developed. In some ways, it's almost similar to All Japan, 90s All Japan, where the wrestlers had their colors, you know? You got the Misawa and the Emerald and all that. That was kind of how that felt, too, where everyone had... There was that distinguishing factor about them instantly where, you know, I mean, it's not... This is not to that level yet where, like... And, you know, All Japan was where, like...
Oh, right.
Like I said, Emerald, you knew that that was Misawa, 100%. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't even... You instantly knew Yellow was Kawada. That's, you know who it is. You don't even need to see anything. Just the colors made you think of the guys. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the level that they were at with the Four Horsewomen, I felt, where they really, you knew. And this is feel like they're kind of getting there again, because all four had their characters. They made sense the way that they interacted with each other. You tease the heel versus heel stuff, but, you know, Levin's ditches. You're primarily getting babyface versus heel stuff throughout the entire match, with the babyfaces working together pretty well throughout. Loved opening match, trash talking, standing up to each other face to face between Belair and Yim. I thought that was perfect. They both just felt like badass block girls, basically. You got Mia Yim being the HBIC, just like the whole thing is super cool. The action was great. I was, you know, Belair, another, I'll do another spoiler. Belair is talked about in my top 50 because she is just a freak natural kind of, you know, rare occurrence of someone who just like instantly put it all together, not just in ring but character too. And yeah, it comes through here so strong, her charisma level, her talent level. And coming out of the match, it's like I was thinking about it, I'm like, well, who's gonna win this? Because they're ostensibly challenging Shayna, and you got the two heels, so it's like, you know, the baby faces, it doesn't seem like it's time to go to Io yet. And then you've got, you know, Mia Yim feels like it's a little bit fast to go to her. So I was kind of like, you know, whatever. But when Bianca wins it, coming out of it, you're like, oh, no, Bianca can easily be the babyface against Shayna. This is going to be great. And so, yeah, I thought that this was fantastic. I'm with you.
She has the charisma to pull it off, but I don't know. I won't be surprised if somehow they get Kairi Sane back in and make it a three-way.
Oh, God. Please don't.
I'm just saying. But yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. Were you surprised in the commentary they mentioned Mia Yim being Shayna's roommate?
Yeah, that's maybe not the best thing to bring up. I am with you on that, but, you know, it's Moro. That's his thing.
Yeah, I mean, I thought maybe, okay, they were maybe building to that match because...
Yeah, that could have been the match.
Roommate angle, but thank God they didn't. Then we got Ryker versus Mitch Taverna. And I don't know if you saw, I got the version without commentary.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it was a technical glitch. It was weird. But Ryker looked good. You know, squash. It feels like they don't have a real, they don't really have an arc for the Suns yet. They've gotten Suns. Obviously they care so much about them that they did one without commentary.
Yeah, exactly. And it hurts because, you know, in a squash match like this, you don't really get much out of it unless you get the commentaries telling you the story that you're supposed to be getting from the match. And I just, you know, I don't really get anything from this.
Yeah.
It just happened. I'm with you. I actually think that the Suns have some legs. You just need to do something with them. But, I mean, maybe they're trying to get heavy machinery out of the way so that you can make room for a team like them, I guess. I don't know.
It's just tough, a six-man group. I mean, I know it worked with Sanity in a way, but no one likes Sanity. I don't know. But I think they're better than Sanity, so there we go on that part.
Right.
Velveteen Dream video package, I thought this was pretty great. And speaking of star power, I mean, Jesus. What do you think, man?
Dream is awesome, ready to right? go, man. Dream is, I mean, he has got it all. He's just a rock star, man. Everything he does works.
Yep. Highlights of the Black Gargano debacle. Fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you really need to remember that? Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And then we get a Ciampa interview. So, And he's getting, and then Black wrestling Ciampa at the next takeover, right? Even though he lost to Gargano.
Yep. And I kind of, so I think that the booking is stupid as shit. And I think that, again, it's like we said, where the wins and losses should matter. But I thought that Ciampa's promo did about as good a job as you could to try to put a cohesive story to it or something with him talking about, you know, the two boys just doing it themselves and you should try to win the other title. Like, really coming across like, you know, he's disingenuous. He just doesn't want Gargano trying to challenge him as he just beat the challenger and all that. But, I mean, it doesn't fix the terrible booking, but it was like trying to salvage it pretty well. I'll give a thumbs up to Ciampa for at least working pretty well at trying to salvage it. It doesn't. And it's still fucking annoying booking, and the whole situation is so bad that, like, I'm hearing people talking about how, you know, those epic great matches from Gargano and Ciampa and even Gargano and Almas are like hurt by what ends up happening with the storyline. And it's like kind of true. This stuff like actively hurts guys overness retroactively. It's like pretty bad.
It does. It's so true. It's like, it's like creative side to just piss all over the legacy of what he did, all his hard work. Then we get Undisputed Era vs. Heavy Machinery. This is pretty much Heavy Machinery. Goodbye. To the promotion. They're heading up to, you know, them, who was it? Lacey Evans, Heavy Machinery, Lara Sullivan.
EC3,
okay. All heading up. I thought this match was excellent. And Heavy Machinery, you know, they're good at what they do well, but fucking Undisputed Era is a great tag team. And, you see O'Reilly targeting Knight's legs and Dojovic's Heavy Machinery using their strengths. Heavy Machinery using power moves during their shine. The double team sets up the heat, working the leg, mixing up with big strikes. I thought the hot tag was pretty awesome. The hot toss was for a great near fall. This was a great match overall. I give it 4 stars. It might have gone a couple minutes too long because I've been in the 3 3/4, 4-star range. But, man, I thought Heavy Machinery looked good at everything they did. But fucking Undisputed Era is a great heel tag team. And, I mean, I honestly think they're the best when it comes to having different matches with different opponents. You know, they're different, but they're old school at heart. They remind me a lot of the Midnight Express and the old Horseman, or the old Gino Hernandez and Tully Blanchard team in a way. They're a really good old school heel tag team, and where it feels like if they had the size, they easily could have worked on top in the Karaka territory or in wherever they were stationed. Good stuff. What do you think, man?
Yeah, and another part of it too that's really cool is to think about that, like, they haven't done it together, but both Kyle and Ronnie have been in babyface tag teams that worked really well too. So it's like, oh, they could probably be an awesome babyface tag team too if they ever switch this over. But they're phenomenal here. Heavy Machinery looked great, I thought, here. Commentary, I'll give them a plus. Good job. I thought that they did a great job putting over. Heavy Machinery are the, you know, amateur style Olympic wrestlers, Undisputed Era, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu martial art type guys. I thought they did a good job, and they helped kind of put that over as the match itself told the story of the match, or told that story of the kind of the two backgrounds of the two teams. I thought that, you talk about the size, but I mean, realistically, they did such a good job as heels working over them that the size really didn't feel like it was a big issue to the match, the size differential. But then the negative for the commentary, as I said, I have to give both. Moro was mentioning that they're the first 2-time tag team champions in NXT, and I wouldn't pick the nit normally about just the wonkiness of it because of, you know, originally the titles were won by Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly. Right. And then they go to Roddy and Kyle, technically. And then, you know, then they win him back from Mustache Mountain. All that, fine. And, like, I wouldn't make a big deal about that, except for that these tag team titles have had, they had like a similar thing with Adrian Neville winning the titles originally and then winning the titles back from the Wyatt family with a separate partner because of his partner, I think, getting fired. He was either injured already or he was fired by then, but he had gotten injured and then got fired. So his replacement was Corey Graves in the tag team. So technically there already has been a two-time tag team champion, and under the same like logic that they're applying here that makes these guys two-time tag team champions, where it's like, it would, all that would have taken is that if Adrian Neville and Corey Graves had used the same tag team name or been in the same stable as Neville and Oliver Gray, then it would have been, you know, two-time champions too. So right. That's why I said, like, I wouldn't normally pick that nit, and the commentary is just trying to put something over. But when you have kind of that weird lineage, and I know that it's WWE histrionics, where basically they rewrite history, and anything that happened in NXT before the WWE network kind of doesn't count anymore. But, you know, again, it's just like a little thing to me where it's like you can't just rewrite history technically. And if you want to be super technical, it's like Adrian Neville is a two-time champion, two-time tag team champion. That's, you can't even argue that.
Definitely ain't going to mention him.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, good match. Like I said, great action from both guys. Really great kind of the way that they showed the contrast between the two, and really showed off Heavy Machinery in a way that's just like, I mean, we both really enjoyed them and they had good matches, but they could have been having this main event caliber match probably the whole, like, for not the whole time, but for a while, and they just were kind of relegated to being in the mid card. So we'll see what happens with them on the main roster. I've heard them being compared to the Authors of Pain, which I think is a weird comparison.
Except for them being big dudes.
Yeah, except for just being kind of big. I mean, the Authors of Pain are a lot more MMA inspired, and it even goes to show, like, when they talked about it here, the Heavy Machinery is like amateur wrestling. So it's like, there's a lot of difference.
And Heavy Machinery has a lot more legs when it comes to doing comedy and vignettes and stuff, right. I think.
That might be a good thing. Like, as much as, like, you know, I think you don't like comedy stuff even as much as I do, and I don't really love comedy stuff that much. I mean, main roster WWE, it's funny. It's almost like DDT. You got to be able to do comedy to get over as a top act. Like, that has to be part of your character. You have to be able to, like, kind of be funny too, because they're going to give you bad jokes. And if you can't pull off the bad jokes, then you're just going to sink.
No, I think Heavy Machinery can fill into, like, an ass-kicking bushwhackers role for them. They could be an ass-kicking fashion, whatever the Tyler Breeze, Fandango.
Oh, the Fashion Police. Yeah.
Yeah, they can do, like, that type of, you know, they can do, I mean, obviously they're not going to do the Fashion Police, you know, or they're not going to do the bushwhackers, but in that comedy vein type of thing, right. and have a role, and have a presence on TV. It all depends, you know, if Vince likes them. I mean, And by them, it's how much he likes Dosovic, because he's the charisma of the team. The other dude is the big lug, where he just happened to be lucky to be tagging with Dosovic. He's just a big guy. It easily could have been, they could have put one of the Author of Pain with Dosovic, and that's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, there is I can't say this because we don't watch it on TV, but there is the story that Tucker Knight is a very good kind of player coach guy. Has taken to the grappling stuff. He was a really good amateur grappler. And, you know, like I said, the reason why he was in the Greatest Royal Rumble and Dozovich wasn't is because they wanted to bring him over to be part of the training, or the tryouts and the training that they were going to do with Indian wrestlers. Okay. So that's part of it too. He probably helped Dozovich mature, get what you're saying. The star power wise, he got very lucky that he got partnered up with a guy that they saw something in to help bring them along, and then he did bring him along to a way that he can kind of ride the coattails a little bit, you know. But that kind of stuff happens.
All your stuff is saying those are the guys who can stay along with the company for a long, long time, a la Bob Holly or Al Snow or what have you. Because of how important they were in behind the scenes type of thing. So,
yeah, exactly.
So that could help out too. I love the show. I thought it was a great episode of NXT, honestly. What about you?
Yeah, compared to, I mean, you know, there's always a disadvantage to NXT UK because there's two episodes. But, yeah. I mean, the breeziest, easiest TV show we watched this week for sure.
NXT, yep. And before we go and talk about the AAW Trevor Lee ACH draw, there's a little ad break. Check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features, and retrospectives. reviews of wrestling books, video games, and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances, non-wrestling TV shows, and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at Pro Wrestling Only Forums. We've been online, as my phone just stopped. Been online for a long time, I know. We've been online for over a decade, and with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads, our message board is a vibrant community all its own. Whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the microscope forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling's past and present, check out all this and more at www.prowrestlingonly.com. Woo! All right. Trevor Lee, ACH. We all know Trevor Lee can fill an hour, you know. He did here. He did a great job. I will say I'm a mark for hour draws. And I don't think you can be a great worker without working an hour draw. But when I'm always comparing people, that's one of the things I look at as like a tiebreaker to me. Because I think the great workers are guys who can fill an hour time. That's why I like the Flairs and the Bockwinkles, the Jack Briscoes, the Kenny Kobashis. Those are the guys when I think about as great workers. They usually get an edge on certain people because they're able to work. They've done hour work. They're able to fill an hour time. Ricky Steamboat's another one. I felt last year Okada. I felt it, them doing an hour. I felt it helped Okada's standing as a great worker. I like to see how wrestlers fill the time. I think it's a feather in your cap to be able to have a great hour draw. You can be a great worker and not do the hour draw, but being able to do so, it's special. And Trevor has proven to be great at them, that we've seen. I've seen him do it. We've seen him do it more than an hour. Here is the heel. I like early on, I like Lee working the arm. These guys early on really make the holds matter. You see it being crisp and there's no hole air in their work. There's an aggressiveness to the mat work. Lee keeps going back to the arm, and I'm digging that. ACH using the headlock as his base. I'm all buying that. The struggle on the holds is amazing here. Everything is a struggle. Nothing looks easier, like cooperative. Lee puts ACH into the corner hard, and now the rest of the time Lee really starts focusing on the back. Love Lee's love Lee's troll of the front row when he teases, tossing him out, makes the front row look dumb. Nice little bit of healing. Healing in 2018, anyway. Lee back on the back. My God, the flying guardrail dropped ACH. I mean, that looked like it crippled him. The forearm strike by Lee was a great near fall. Lee is just all over that back. ACH is so great at selling everything. The revenge spot by ACH with the double spot to Lee's back was a nice touch. ACH is selling while snap suplexing Lee is great. They kept the crowd for the most part, and they even got the crowd. You got the crowd getting hot at the 50, getting up for the 50 at the 50 minute mark. That's the key, man. Able to keep the crowd for you for that whole ride, and they did. Great finishing run. I gave it 4 stars. My some of the complaints I had was some things they did to fill time. I guess just the attitude now in 2018 where like sitting in a headlock is a bad thing. But here, they instead of a rest hold, they did a lot of reversing things, or a lot of switching the handles, or a little counter on a waist lock, where you think they're doing something, but in reality they're doing absolutely nothing. But it has motion because they're doing do-si-do to you. And I can understand doing that to fill time, because it gives you the illusion that they're doing stuff, but they're actually, it's the same essence of them sitting in a headlock. You think they're just sitting in a rest hold. That's pretty much what they're doing, is just exchanging positions in a waist lock. And we got that a lot. And that was really one of my only downsides to it. Everything else I thought was excellent work from both guys. And they should be proud of themselves. Well, what about you, man? Where are you throwing this one?
Yeah, I mean, you really hit a lot of the important talking points here. But the big picture side of it's really interesting. I mean, you got CWF, peak CWF Trevor showing up here against what's becoming peak ACH from AAW. I know ACH is a guy that you followed for a while, being from Texas. Yeah. He's a guy that I followed for a while and was not the biggest fan of. I think, interestingly enough, I think these two guys probably over the course of the past 4 years have had like the biggest crossover in my opinions of them, especially this year. I wish I had seen this and some of the other Trevor Lee stuff, and then also kind of rewatching PWG stuff that I was there for live and stuff that I wasn't there for. I probably would have had Trevor higher on my list than I ended up with him, especially with this match. But ACH is a guy who went from low to really high for me this year. So these guys both, but they came together here and did what made both of these guys be high at my list at different times for Wrestler of the Year. ACH, I really cannot believe, and it was shocking. I mean, Quentin mentions it on the top 50. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous almost how high I have ACH based on how I talked about him even just last year. I mean, he's a guy who repeatedly, the Bugs Bunny thing, you know, I constantly talk about it. His selling is phenomenal now. The guy makes you believe in everything. He picks body parts that he focuses on. He keeps that thigh always taped up so he can always go back to selling that. But throughout this match, he's selling the midsection and the back completely. Trevor's going after it big time. The huge spots, the way that he makes everything he does mean something. He really drags out the drama of everything. I mean, he has his moments where he does a lot, but it's not egregious anymore. It used to be, it felt like a lot of times it felt like he was doing stuff to do it. Now it feels like everything he does has a meaning. It's really super impressive. The way that he sells the back, I mean, that backdrop on the fucking guardrail is just insane as is, but then the selling from ACH afterwards is just,
yeah,
I mean, magnificent. The guy just, you get so into him. I love that, like you said, trolling the front row was perfect, because Trevor has been doing a lot of shtick and a lot of bullshit, and it felt like just that little bit, and not really the most of the rest of the match really focusing on the wrestling and on the work. It made that shine even more where it is. It's like, that's why it works when you do it limited. You
know? And it felt important because at the time it felt like the crowd was kind of zoning out of the match a little bit, and Trevor's trolling kind of brought him back into it.
Yeah. Gets him back into it. It's I mean, you know, you could say it's kind of cheap or it's whatever it is, like it's a little trick to get the crowd, but it does get the crowd hyped, and that's why it's easy to fall into it, because you can use that kind of stuff to keep the crowd invested. But when you do it sparingly, I think it pays off more.
Yeah.
You know, Trevor grabbing the mic and using it, especially after not doing the pre-match promo, which has been kind of his, I mean, this year, 2018 has been the year of the Trevor Lee pre-match promo. I mean, he's been killing it with these pre-match promos all over the place, just being just over the top. But he doesn't do it here, but then he gets the mic mid-match to help again fill out time, but in a way that's not as obvious that it's just time filler. I'm with you. I think 4-star, probably 4.25 for me. And the only thing I could say that really hurts this match a lot is the commentary. I mean, the commentary sucks. Like, AAW commentary. They went from being offensive in the past with commentators trying to make jokes that just are in poor taste to now being bad in a way that's boring and in some ways undermines the work. I felt like they went to talking about how long they've been wrestling way too early and then way too often to where it really telegraphs what's going on in the match. And that was just, yeah, really difficult for me. There were some other little spots here and there that was annoying, but that was the biggest one that I felt like kind of hurt the match. They did a really good job towards the end, not feeling like they're like intentionally rushing to the time limit draw. They really felt like it came naturally, which I thought was super impressive to do that, because a lot of times it feels super forced in ring. Again, the only thing that sucks is with how good of a job they did at that the commentary kind of hurt it. But then the post-match stuff. Post-match stuff I thought was really good, with ACH wanting 5 more minutes and Trevor even like pretending like he's getting into it with the crowd, and then he gets jumped by Kingston. And yeah, I would say that with everything else involved and just how great of a year ACH has had, that's another thing that kind of hurts it, is this match feels like ACH, you know, lost the title and then now he's wrestling the secondary champion, and why is it like a special challenge non-title match and just all that kind of stuff. It's like, if this had been just a big time AAW championship challenge match that ended up in a draw like this with Trevor Lee, it would have kind of added to the bolstering of that, this kind of really awesome title run that ACH had this year. So that hurt, you know, that kind of stuff hurts it a little bit. But it was a really cool, maybe possibly go away match, not just for Trevor, but also for ACH. I mean, there's some rumors about that too. So that's kind of interesting that these guys were able to come here and just really tear this down in what might be their swan song. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it feels like it's going to be a swan song, because I know ACH is working Ricky Starks in Austin, and that's one of his best friends. So that feels like almost like a swan song in a way.
Yeah, like he picked that intentionally. Yeah.
Yeah, he's putting over his best, one of his best friends. So we'll see. But hey, that is that. I will be back next week with Action Wrestling and our normal stuff. I hear NXT is running a 2-hour show this week. So be prepared for that. And for that, Tim, anything you want to plug?
The top 50. We've already talked about it enough, really. But. But I do have that out on this same feed, so you can go check that out. And follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Check out WorldCast Wednesday, is where we discuss most of the time World Class Championship Wrestling on Wednesdays. And have a great week. Have a great new year coming up. And hell, watch. Watch whatever wrestling that you enjoy. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Lay. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. All right. Already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come to the show. Goes on. All right. Already the show.
All on your soul and put whips up on your back. They be lying through they teeth, hope you slip up off your path. I don't switch up, I just laugh. Put my kicks up on they desk, unaffected by they threats. Then get busy on they ass. See, that's how that shit tell me. That's how my daddy raised me. That glittering may not be gold, don't let nobody play me. If you are my homeboy, you never have to pay me. Go on and put your hands up, when times is hard you stand up. L.U.P. the man, cause a brand that the fans trust.